Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how's it going?
Kyle, it's going pretty good. How is it going with you?
It's very good. I'm very excited. I'm on the cusp of a holiday.
Oh my God, on the cusp of leaving
the country.
That's incredible.
A good time. A great time. Some might say, but who knows?
Who knows? I mean, we'll find out in a couple of episodes.
Yes.
How your vacation was, because I'm sure we'll ask and I won't be rude and just ignore you.
Definitely some of the what I watched that week will be Broadway shows.
Oh, you're going to be flexing so hard. You are going to have so much weight behind what you watch. I'm going to be sitting there like, I didn't watch anything again because I'm studying accounting like a little nerd.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, well, I was just off Broadway.
Well, did you watch anything in the last week,
though? No, I've been studying accounting because I'm a little nerd. How about you, Kyle?
I watched a couple of things. It's funny, we recorded Memento earlier than we normally do last week, but if we had recorded it on time, I would have watched another Nolan film because Molly and I went to a IMAX re-release of Inception.
Wow.
And it's such a good movie.
It's
so fucking good. And to see it on that scale again, mwah. Magnifico.
It's one of those movies that you want to come back to IMAX, like even fairly regularly, just so you can go back and watch it each time.
Totally.
That'd be a really cool experience. There's a lot of Nolan movies that'd be so sick to watch again on IMAX.
Well, it was cool because they were doing like the whole spread of Nolan. Like they did everything from all three Batman movies, Interstellar, Inception, Tenet, and what's the other one? Dunkirk. They were doing all of those over a weekend. And I considered Interstellar because that one is definitely a sight to behold on an IMAX screen. But I think I held out because it's a very long movie and it was going to be during my week. But yeah, it was really good. And I found out I picked up new things watching it again because I think I saw Inception in IMAX when it came out. I think I was old enough that I knew that that was something that I should go to.
Yeah, and I feel like if you didn't watch it in IMAX, you would have gone back to see it in IMAX.
Totally. The other movie I saw in theaters was a new A24 movie called Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Ooh.
We probably saw the trailers for that. Did you see any trailers for that?
It doesn't sound familiar. Okay. I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's essentially like a whodunit, but like a Gen Z. I almost said Jay-Z.
But it's Jay-Z does it. Don't watch the movie.
Yeah, but it's like a Gen Z whodunit in that they're playing a game that's akin to like Werewolf, but like they are walking around and if you touch someone, they have to die. It's like Among Us, but like in person.
Yeah.
And so they're playing the game and then they find like a real body. And somebody who's really been killed. And so now they're trying to suss out like who actually did it. It's really fun. It's a really good movie. I actually really liked it. It's got a cool ending.
Yeah.
I really liked the resolve of and the answer basically that they gave you. It was unexpected, but in the best way. Oh, so yeah.
That's cool. It sounds like there's like, because from the premise, it sounds like a bunch of theater people were like sitting around a campfire playing werewolves and just thought like, what if we gave this A24 vibes and then made a movie? But I am glad that it was good because Werewolves is a good game and it needs big screen recognition.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But yeah, and that was it. That was all I watched in the last week. So
interesting.
Except for obviously this movie.
Ooh.
Of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2001. And for episode 3, we are talking about Ocean's 11. I considered putting this on episode 11.
That would have been funny, but also like, it wouldn't be that
important. It was not essential, no. But have you seen it before?
I have not seen this before.
Interesting.
Even a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you seen it before?
I have. I've seen the whole series before.
Mm-hmm.
I think my mom showed it literally on your way in. She was like, I love the Ocean series. 11's my favorite. And I was like, yeah, that's probably why I watched it at a youthful age was because it was fed to me. But it's been a long time since I've seen it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was excited to revisit because I really like these heist type movies. And this has always held a place in my head as like kind of a quintessential or like just like a reference heist movie sort of thing.
Yeah, like the archetypal heist movie.
Yeah.
They're all built off the Ocean's 11 back.
Totally. And I think it was good for me to watch it again while being older because then I firstly can remember everybody who's in this movie because there's like, it's got a good cast. Like,
it's got a big cast.
I always forget which, if Don Cheadle was in this one or if he's in like the other ones, but he is in this one.
I think he's in all of them.
I think he might be, yeah.
Up to this point, yeah. Because I believe an Ocean's prequel's coming out.
Yes, I saw that on Twitter today that Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie
yes.
are also going to be in that Ocean's prequel. I didn't see Ocean's 8, the other prequel that was trying to do 8, 9, and 10, but never happened. So, yeah, people like Casey Affleck, totally forgot we're in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Casey Affleck, in your defense, is a forgettable human being.
Yeah, I always remember just Brad Pitt and George Clooney. Mm-hmm. I always forget Matt Damon, though. Matt Damon is one who always like, just like, I forget he's in this movie all the time, but sure enough, he is. Do you want to get into it?
Let's dive right in on.
Well, if you were interested in Ocean's 11 or the original 1960s film it is based on, I've included links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder, this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen Ocean's 11 yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Ocean's 11 is a 2001 American heist comedy film. It was directed by Steven Soderbergh and was written by Ted Griffin. It was based on the 1960 film of the same name, which I didn't know existed. No. So when I looked up Ocean's 11 and it said 1960, I said, no, it's not. But then I figured out what's going on.
Yes, it is.
But also, oh, I was wrong. This is starring George Clooney as Danny Ocean, Matt Damon as Linus Caldwell, Andy Garcia as Terry Benedict, Brad Pitt as Rusty Ryan, Julia Roberts as Tess Ocean, Casey Affleck as Virgil Malfoy, Scott Caan as Turk.
Is that his name? Virgil Malfoy?
Virgil Malfoy. Unless I wrote it down wrong, but a lot of these names, there's so many names in this list that I probably made up three of them, and it's up to the audience to figure out which ones.
I think it's Malloy.
Virgil Malfoy. Scott Caan as Turk Malloy. Don Cheadle as Bashir Tar. Elliot Gould as Ruben Tishkoff. Eddie Jemison as Bernie. Whoa, I skipped the name in here. Oh no, I lost the juice. It's just Eddie Jemison, comma. Bernie Mac as Frank Catton. And Shabo Keen as Yen. I will not go back and correct who Eddie Jemison is. He just is. There's too many characters. I blame.
Did you even mention Don Cheadle there?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I lost track. Totally.
I think you wished you forgot Don Cheadle in the movie.
Because he sticks out so much. So bad. Like, I don't know. He feels like a guy pretending to do an English accent. I don't know. We'll get
How
to this.
Cast? Anyways, this has a runtime of 117 minutes. And was released on December 1st, 2001. Kyle, what did you think of Ocean's 11?
It's pretty fun. It's like a super easy movie to watch. I think it's kind of safe in some.
Oh, it's so safe. It's a giant vault. It's so safe.
Yeah, and like I found that the movie doesn't challenge the characters enough sometimes.
No.
I feel like they get away with it too easy.
They don't even get arrested and they stole money. That's so bad. Where's the morals of this? Yeah, it was like too safe. In my opinion, there were no risks. So I had a good time overall. It was still a fun little treasure hunt to the middle of a giant vault for banks.
Yeah.
So like, but I just didn't feel like at any point there were any stakes.
Yeah.
The only injury is someone hurts their fingers. We got some fingies crushed in a door. Mm-hmm. That was the only thing that went wrong the entire time, as far as I recall. Everything else was just like expertly planned, but that you weren't told ahead of time of how some of the problems were going to be solved. So I don't know. Yeah. It was a watch.
Yes.
It was so easy. It didn't challenge anything.
It is a very light and fluffy movie at its core. And I think the charm of it is like, the actors, them being all together and playing off each other. And obviously George Clooney and Brad Pitt, like you put those two in a room and they'll charm the pants off anybody.
They're great. It's like they were charming each other, like an out charming contest. Yeah. And it was beautiful to watch.
Yeah. But should we just get into this plot?
Let's dive into this plot.
I'm going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Ocean's 11. Following his release from prison, Danny Ocean violates his parole by traveling to California to meet his partner in crime and friend Rusty Ryan to propose a new heist. The two go to Las Vegas to pitch the plan to wealthy friend and former casino owner Ruben Tishkoff. The plan consists of simultaneously robbing the Bellagio, the Mirage, and the MGM Grand casinos. Ruben's familiarity with casino security makes him very reluctant to get involved, but when he starts to think of it as a good way to get back at his rival, Terry Benedict, who owns all three casinos, he agrees to finance the operation. The three men know that the Nevada Gaming Commission requires casinos to have enough cash on hand to cover all their patrons' bets, and they predict that on the upcoming night of a highly anticipated boxing match, the Bellagio vault will contain more than $150 million. Danny and Rusty recruit eight former colleagues and criminal specialists: Linus Caldwell, Frank Catton, Virgil and Turk Malloy, Basher Tarr, Saul Bloom, Livingston Dell, and the amazing Yen. Several team members carry out reconnaissance at the Bellagio to learn as much as possible about the security, the routines, the behavior of the casino staff, and the building itself. Other members create a precise replica of the vault, which is built in order to practice maneuvering through its formidable security systems. During this planning phase, the team discovers that Danny's ex-wife, Tess, is Benedict's girlfriend. Rusty urges Danny to give up on the plan, believing Danny incapable of sound judgment while Tess is involved, but Danny refuses. On the night of the fight, the plan is put into motion. Danny shows up at the Bellagio purposely to be seen by Benedict, who, as predicted, locks him in a storeroom with Bruiser, a bouncer. However, Bruiser is on Danny's payroll and allows him to access the vent system and join his team as they seize the vault, coinciding with activities of their other team members in and around the casino. Rusty calls Benedict on a cell phone Danny dropped in Tess's coat earlier and tells him that unless he lets them have half of the money in the vault, they will blow it up. Benedict sees video footage confirming Rusty's claim. Benedict complies, having his bodyguards take the loaded duffel bags to a waiting van driven by remote control. Benedict has his men follow the van while he calls in a SWAT team to try and secure the vault. The SWAT team's arrival causes a shootout that sets off the explosives and incinerates the remaining cash. After affirming the premises otherwise secure, the SWAT team collects their gear and departs. As Benedict arrives to examine the ruined vault himself, the men stop the van and find the bags were only loaded with flyers for prostitutes. Benedict studies the video footage and recognizes that the flooring in the vault on the video lacks the Bellagio logo, which had been added only recently to the vault. It is shown that Danny's team used their practice vault to create fake footage to fool Benedict. Furthermore, they themselves were the SWAT team and used their gear bags to take all of the money from the vault right under Benedict's nose. Benedict goes to see that Danny has seemingly been locked up in the storeroom throughout the heist and thus innocent of any involvement. As Tess watches via closed circuit television, Danny tricks Benedict into saying he would give her up in exchange for the money. Benedict, dissatisfied with Danny's plan to get back the money, orders his men to escort Danny off the premises and inform the police that he is violating his parole by being in Las Vegas. Tess leaves Benedict and exits the hotel just in time to see Danny arrested. The rest of the team bask in the victory in front of the fountains of Bellagio, silently going their separate ways one by one. When Danny is released after serving time for his parole violation, he is met by Rusty and Tess. They drive off, closely followed by Benedict's bodyguards, whose presence was noted by Rusty as he and Danny approached Rusty's car. But that's Ocean's 11.
Wow, there was Ocean's 11. Incredible. Okay. The thing that stuck out to me the most as what was the entire character and everything that was done by Tess, especially at the end when she's like, that's my husband. What was the point of any of her character being there? What changes because she exists?
Nothing. I think George Clooney knew that she was going to be there. Oh, yeah, because he says to Brad Pitt's character that he's partly ripping off this guy because he's dating his wife.
Yeah.
And so, like, obviously he had some motivation to do that. But, like, I did not think he was going to get her back. Like,
no,
it seemed pretty cold cut, like she was done with him.
Yeah.
And so, like, after like one move of him being like, actually, your current boyfriend is an asshole.
Yeah.
She's just like, oh, I'm coming back to you, George Clooney.
Oh, wait, you have money? Like, her character was done so dirty because she stands up to him for being a manipulative, lying piece of trash. Dump him, sweetie. And then, like, her new boyfriend's also mean to her. So instead of having any kind of character growth where she's like, man, I just need to work on myself. I need to take a little vacation.
Yeah.
Maybe hit up a good massage, work some stress out, because clearly she's under a lot. Instead, she just like runs back to the guy who was a dick to her before, who made her want to leave. Like, what a waste of time for
just
everyone.
Just because he proved a point that like a rich billionaire was an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a surprise.
Yeah. The guy that owns 3 casino/hotels is more worried about his money than you, a woman he started dating quite recently. Like, that's not that's not a massive revelation.
Yeah. And if you really poke holes into it, she really looks like a gold digger. Because like as soon as she knows, because obviously she knows that they robbed him, as soon as she knows that, she's right back in Danny's arms. And so it's like, oh, well, you took his money. I guess I'll come to you. It makes her look really bad.
Yeah. And it was also a dumb thing where like when she walks out on the guy, I think his name's Benedict.
Yeah, Benedict. Yeah.
All Benedict has to say was, I lied. That was a bluff. Obviously, I'm not going to give you up when he gives me the money back. Like, why does she go like, oh, he must mean this deep down to his core?
Yeah.
When like, what else was he going to say?
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was a dumb element to the movie. I think they should have reworked what that relationship was and what they're building to on that, because it felt dumb and unnecessary.
Yeah. They should have also added, because if they were going to have her be a point of conflict and they wanted Danny out of it because that relationship can mess things up, she should have been in there like messing things up. Like I thought that was going to be a problem for them. Like Tess was going to be in there like knowing what was going on, and because she doesn't care about Danny anymore, she's going to poke the holes in their plan and make things kind of go wrong, but you know, maybe they'll still eventually pull it off. Cuz like we've kind of said before, the plot, like, it was really easy for them. It seemed
so easy.
Like, it seemed they had a whole thing figured out. Everybody that they needed to be on payroll was on their payroll, like the big beat up guy. They looked away from cameras at like perfect times. Like people just weren't looking at cameras exactly when they needed to not look at cameras. Like the only conflicts that happened was that the guy broke his hand, the Amazing Yan broke his hand. And
I don't know if there was a second thing. See, I don't think there was.
And when Saul passed, like when he like looked like he was having a heart attack and sweating, I thought that guy was actually dead. Like I thought he was deceased, like dead on arrival there. But then Brad Pitt shows up. He's like, someone need a doctor. And I was like, well, fuck. So this was planned too? Like him like potentially dying?
Like, you couldn't have one thing actually go wrong with the plan to cause them to have to scramble? Because that's what I was hoping the heist was going to be. Yeah. Like, they start with this crazy meticulous plan that you know the broad strokes of. Mm-hmm. And then they just have to kind of like pivot and work around mistakes as they happen.
Yeah.
Which would induce some kind of like stress or like suspense in it.
Yeah.
Like, the one suspenseful moment that they have is when the dude pre-heist breaks into the server room.
Yeah.
And then it's diffused in seconds. That's it.
Yeah.
It was actually nothing. False alarm. We're good. Move on. And nothing else goes wrong.
Totally. Yeah. I do wish it wasn't so light and fluffy. Like that's just kind of like my main criticism of the movie. Because otherwise it's got like a great ensemble. I mean, there's some weird choices with some accents. I don't know. Let's talk about Don Cheadle.
We have to raise the Cheadle question, which is, what the fuck was going on? That was the worst Cockney accent I think they were going for.
Yeah, he was
more
going
like cockeyed accent. That was all askew. All of it was wrong. It was so bad. I thought it was a joke when they first introduced him as that. And like, he was just playing up that as like a hidden identity thing.
Yeah.
But then when he starts talking to Brad Pitt's character, he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
And then that's actually who he is. And it's just that bad. Why did they cast him?
I don't know. Because you could have cast like an English guy and had him just be like up the English a bit, you know, like do a little bit more of the Cockney accent. Why did we get all American Don Cheadle to do this super Cockney English accent? And like, I'm sorry, Don Cheadle's amazing actor. He doesn't pull it off.
No, like, it looks like the only prep he did was watch a couple episodes of Peppa Pig and then says like, all right, we're ready to go. Blimey, mate.
Yeah, literally he's like, governor. I was like, oh my God. Like,
it's Tuesday. And it's Don Cheadle.
He's literally saying the things that people make fun of English people by saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Was it maybe in the script? Was like the script like written like a really bad English character, and Don Cheadle's well like, this is a fucking joke, I'll just ham it up. But it's just so weird.
I do have a fun fact later that touches on this.
Cool. I'm excited to get to that.
I think just overall, I mean, there was a couple things where it felt really overwritten too.
Yeah.
Like a lot, I think the worst offender of that was the conversation that Danny has with Tess in the hotel or in the casino restaurant before Benedict comes back.
Yeah.
Where it is so snappy that it doesn't feel like high pressure or that they're even actually sniping at each other, because each response is so fast that there's no pause or break. And it just feels like an overwritten conversation and not like a natural animosity from Tess to Danny. And Danny's trying to win her back subtly. Yeah. So he's trying to play up a character and charm her while she's trying to shut him down. It was just like, boom, 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 boom. Just so many points hit so quick that it didn't feel like a real conversation at all.
Yeah, stuff like that can take you out of it because you realize that you're like watching a movie and it's like, this is movie dialogue, when a lot of the conversations needed to feel natural. And I think for the most part, it does feel natural. And that snappy dialogue does kind of just fall into the backdrop of the movie itself, because it is really well paced and well edited and pretty well shot. And the actors pull off their dialogue pretty well. But yeah, like I could see where you would feel that.
It's a lot of movie. It's not always bad, though, because it is supposed to be a fun heist movie. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it works really well. And I did really enjoy the actual heist work.
Yeah.
Especially at the end when they reveal that they're the SWAT officers. I thought, okay, that's fun. Yeah. I enjoyed that. It just would never really get to the heights of like a powerful, really challenges the audience or like has some kind of thing to overcome. Mm-hmm. It never hits that height. But if you're looking for like a lightweight, easy to watch, this has George Clooney in it kind of movie. Baby, this has George Clooney in it and it's a movie.
Yeah, it's super easy to watch. And I think that the heart and soul of our nitpicks from this movie are just like, it needed to have more conflict, essentially. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just really easy, really fluffy, and, you know, a good time.
Mm-hmm. It's still a fun time.
Well,
I do want to get into some critics and audience review.
Let's do that.
Kyle, I'm going to make you guess where audiences are at for Rotten Tomatoes and the critics as well. But you have to give it to me in a Don Cheadle Cockney accent.
Well, hello, mate. I think. Oh, fuck, I can't do that.
You know, you can't get bad enough. That's the thing. If you're trying to do a British accent, you're probably doing too good already.
I think it's probably mid-80s for critics, maybe high 80s for audiences, like 89 maybe. I don't see it going over 90 for audiences.
No, you would not see it go over 90 for audiences anywhere. You're pretty close. Critics, 83. I'll give you that one. Ooh. Audiences, 80. So in the realm, in the same area.
Totally.
IMDb slapping down a 7.7 and Metacritic, a 74.
That's actually pretty high on the IMDb side. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, you want to talk about heisting a lot of money? This thing made $451 million on a budget of $85 million.
Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty decent budget considering the leads that they had.
The leads, the location, everything else that was involved in that. That's the kind of budget that could run away on you pretty fast.
Because didn't we learn from another, wasn't it the Swingers episode, but they don't shut down the casino when they're filming?
Yeah.
So there must have been some like, that must have been difficult.
Oh, yeah. With that many like high powered stars too. Because at least with Swingers, like no one's recognizing these guys. So they're just two dudes with cameras on them.
Yeah.
This is George Clooney.
Yeah.
This is Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
This is Don Cheadle doing a bad job. These are the kind of guys you would stop and want to talk to when you see him in a casino.
Yeah. And this, I mean, Julia Roberts was hot then too, because this was right off of another Steven Soderbergh movie, Erin Brockovich, which I think she was either nominated or won for Best Actress, but she was in that conversation for sure.
Yeah. And she was pulling some pretty big bills too. Yeah. She was a very high paid actress at the time. For number at the box office of that year, it would take number 5.
That's pretty good.
So we're big swinging. Yeah. Still off the hop. We got some big numbers and Memento. Mm.
I would say that's like, it's good for an original, but it's not original. It's based off of an IP, I guess.
With a giant star-studded cast. Yeah. But was despite Don Cheadle's accent. All right, time for our scores. Kyle, we're going to start you off with your enjoyment factor. What are you going to give this?
Well, I wrote these right off what I watched them. I put a 4. I think I'm sticking with that because I did enjoy my time with Ocean's 11. I just think I can see the holes in it. And like I can see where I maybe wanted more. It's just, I really like watching this movie. It's just nice to watch. So
that's 4. Valid. You're valid. Your opinion's welcome. I'm going to give this a 3.
Yeah.
I enjoyed parts of it and other parts. I kind of wanted a bit more from it.
Yeah, totally.
I wish they actually made the heist. I kind of thought, like, how could you not make the heist suspenseful?
Yeah.
have some kind of challenge to overcome there. It's not even that hard to.
There was that bit where the Amazing Yen gets his bandage stuck in the vault and you think that he's going to get his hand like trapped or like ripped off or something by the vault, but that doesn't happen.
But then he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because and also, the batteries were out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There was also the battery out. That was like such a casual issue. He just had batteries on him.
Yeah.
Like
who has on it, right now, stop what you're doing. In 15 seconds, grab 2 AA's. You can't. No one has that available right now. Like, no one's doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I have AA batteries right there.
All
right,
Kyle, I'm putting a timer on. But I mean, that's still just the extension of the one thing that went wrong, which is Yen hurts his hand.
Mm.
So I'm not even giving them that.
Yep.
So too bad. What's your craft, Kyle?
I also actually gave this a 4. I think it's really well shot. I thought the costumes were good. The energy was kept throughout, so it was pretty well edited. But yeah, I give it a 4.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I gave this one a 3.5. I did enjoy the editing. I thought that was good. I kind of thought the rest, nothing really blew me away from what they were doing.
Yeah.
But I did not have any qualms with that.
Totally.
What's your execution?
I'm going to go 3.5 here.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, again, competently acted with a weird choice by Don Cheadle. There's weird always choice. An asterisk.
I can't believe that happened. That the people behind that movie allowed audiences to see and witness that. That should bump the audience rating up to like a mature.
Yeah.
You need to be a certain age to handle what Don Cheadle had coming out of his mouth.
But like as we've said, it's pretty easy, pretty light and fluffy. And so I wish there was a little bit more conflict written into that. And that's where it loses some points for me on execution.
I'm going to be a little bit tough on this one. I'm giving it a 2.5 for execution.
Ooh.
It lost me in a couple areas. And I think like most of my issues was the dialogue wasn't amazing all the time.
Yeah.
Don Cheadle is in this and British. I'm not over that yet. And there are a couple other things that made me go like, with what we had here, we could have done better.
Yeah.
What's your rewatchability?
I actually give this a 4. I think this is a really easy movie to rewatch. I think it's a totally fun movie to put on, just plow through. You could pay attention, you could not pay attention. Super easy just to throw on and recommend to people. Pretty safe. So it's a 4 for me, actually.
Yeah, I'm doing a 4 as well. I think that's where this movie shines. You could probably watch this 30 times and be as ready for the 31st viewing as you were for the 30th.
Totally.
So yeah. I got no issues there.
And I mean, like, that is kind of to that movie's credit in a sense, too. Like, we've been kind of clamoring that it doesn't have enough conflict. This, you know, a little bit easy sometimes, but it's also makes it easy to watch.
Like, yeah.
And that's, you know, that gives it points for the rewatchability.
Exactly. I think it deserves a little bit something for that.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, you have given this a 15.5 out of 20 for a 78%. I have given this a 13 out of 20 for a 65%. And what's funny is we both gave this movie the same score that we gave Harry Potter.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Wild.
Hmm.
That is going to bring us to our ranking.
Okay.
Kyle, are you ready for yours?
Yes.
Memento, Harry Potter.
It is going to go under Memento, above Harry Potter, my new number 2.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been great if we'd done this later so it somehow could have worked to be number 11. Ah, that's not looking
it
likely.
It might work its way down.
There might be a moment. And I'm gonna bold those spots in the Excel just so I remember that if Ocean's 11 ever gets there, to mention it for a couple seconds.
Yeah. I feel like it can. Like, I feel like with these first 3, they can drop. I'm not secure in all of these.
No, I think they have a really good chance of moving down. Like, they're not bad movies. But
No.
I'm thinking back to any other season and they're middle of the pack in there.
Yeah.
But they get the first mover advantage.
Yeah.
I'm going to be dropping Ocean's 11 down to my number 3. So my order will be Memento, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11.
Wow. This might be the earliest we've ever split.
I think so. Yeah. Just episode 3.
Dang.
Wow. I mean, it was pretty close. Again, we gave Harry Potter and Ocean's 11 the same scores.
Yeah.
So like I could go either way, but I feel better about Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was that was kind of where I was humming and hawing for a little while because I knew that I liked Memento more, or I think I at least appreciated Memento for what it did more than this.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to Harry Potter, I think I really respected the world it built and the, you know, the whole aesthetic of it. But at the end of the day, the narratively, it wasn't as strong.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, saying a lot because we just spent the last bulk of this episode complaining that this movie doesn't have that much conflict. But then again, Harry Potter also didn't have that much conflict. So
no.
Here we are.
I think between me, when it comes down to a tie, I always think, which movie had more Alan Rickman in it?
Oh, yeah.
And Harry Potter does have the 1-0 advantage on that. So that was the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I could do it.
All right, Kyle, you ready for some fun Letterboxd reviews?
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, this one has a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
That's pretty high, actually.
It is pretty high. There were a lot of reviews, so I've tried to grab some fun ones, some good ones. We'll start off with Angela Ferragutto. 5 stars. George Clooney and Brad Pitt make such hot and heavy eye contact when they reunite, I almost left the room to give them space. Now, what I think the movie, if this wanted to be a bold movie, what I think it needed to do is remove Tess entirely and just have the romance be between George Clooney and Brad Pitt's characters. I think that would make a better movie. I
totally
think that would make something more interesting.
And you wouldn't have the unnecessary tease of additional conflict because they're just romancing it out.
Yeah.
They're just in love madly.
Yeah.
And they're going to heist together
and
get out of there.
You know, they went to steal some money, but oh, wait, did they steal each other's hearts by accident too? Next one, we have Issy, 4.5 stars. If Don Cheadle tries to come anywhere near the UK on the Infinity War press tour, I'll personally greet him at the airport and fight him to the death. Is obviously a little bit dated, but the point stands that it is probably on site with Don Cheadle and the United Kingdom.
Oh, man, that's just the weirdest thing to come out of this movie.
I know.
What is that?
It's something that I'm going to hold for a long time, too. Francis Crumble, 0.5 stars. Where were these guys when my mom confiscated my Game Boy? Fair play. Oh, man, some call that worth more than $140 million, and I might be there with them.
Oh, now I kind of want to see like an Ocean's 11 style movie about some kid and his group of friends trying to get back their like Game Boys.
It's just like some kid in like 2006 trying to go on the computer for the internet after bedtime.
You could actually add tension because with the speed of the internet at the time, the pixels are like loading as they go and you're like looking back and forth. Wow.
It's some kid very quickly trying to watch porn. But oh, wait, you can't mute the startup sound.
Yeah. Ocean's 11-year-old.
Okay. One more. Malia, 1 star. If robbery movie with great actors, why boring?
What?
One more time. If robbery movie with great actors, why boring?
Okay.
I don't know, Malia.
That's funny.
I enjoyed the composition of that sentence. We threw it in.
Yeah.
All right. What kind of traction do you think this might have garnered at the Academy Awards?
Well, Steven Soderbergh was hot. He was coming off of Traffic and Aaron Brockovich. So I feel like he could have some attention. I don't think there's going to be any acting attention, though, because no one really stood out. Obviously, George Clooney and Brad Pitt are, you know, they were probably on the Academy's minds, but I don't think either of them stood out to be nominated for that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go writing.
This got nothing.
No way.
Nothing. Okay,
I thought maybe writing.
No steam at the Academy Awards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I went through a whole thought process there just for you to fucking dunk on.
You were getting so into the weeds. I'm like, I can't wait to tell him that this didn't even get a look. Not even a whiff. Hmm. Ocean's 11, Oscar 0. For other notable awards, though, nothing really.
Hmm. Yeah.
No one really cared.
It's kind of like, it's like a blockbuster in a way. Like,
yeah.
It's weird that this kind of movie, I mean, heist movies are not that common, but I guess they are kind of blockbuster type movies because they are like action thrillery esque. Like when you get to the core of them.
Yeah. It's just kind of like this is a classy, upscale Transformers war for the planet of Ultron, Cybertron. It's not going to get a lot of critical attention, but it made a lot of money.
Yeah. Maybe their issue was that Michael Bay didn't direct this.
Oh, my God. You know Yen's hand's getting blown off of Michael Bay's directing this.
Yes, please.
Well, does any of that shock you? Are you dismayed at the lack of reception this got?
I was a little bit surprised. I thought maybe adapted screenplay, but I guess not.
I guess not. Well, to make up for that, I got a whole schmack of interesting facts for this one.
Schmack me with those interesting facts.
The Bellagio let the crew tap into their security system to get real surveillance footage of the casino.
Wow.
Interesting. Sounds a little unnecessary.
You've never been to Vegas, right?
Pardon?
You've never been to Vegas?
I've never been to Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've been to all these spots.
Oh.
We stayed at the Mirage, but I've walked through the Bellagio and the MGM Grand.
You can tell us, Kyle, is this a safe spot? Did you steal any money? We won't call the police. Listeners, you're promising. We're not calling the police on this. Did you steal any money?
Anyways, back to what you were saying.
I've taken that as a yes. Okay. The entire cast worked for less than their usual salaries to bring down the budget of the movie.
That makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you see that it made $400 million, do you think they're thinking like, okay, we could have billed normally?
I think they're like, for the next one, we'll bill normally. Actually,
yeah.
I wonder, let's hot check what Ocean's 12's budget was.
$110 million. USD for Ocean's 12.
So they added one more cast member, yeah,
and 25 yeah. millies.
Well,
I mean, that's pretty good. What about Ocean's 13? Back down to 85 million. They lost their leash. They were extended a bonus, and then they're like, okay, no, you still kept Don Cheadle. Oh, same accent. No, you're losing that again.
Cool. That's interesting.
Yeah. During the several takes it took to shoot the scene in which Rusty and Linus are spying on Tess as she is introduced coming down the stairs, Brad Pitt, who plays Rusty, was eating shrimp from a shrimp cocktail and ate 40 shrimp.
Oh my God.
I feel like this is an absolutely great usage for a spit bucket. It's not a long scene. That's a lot of shrimp, my guy. That's a lot of shrimp.
Literally, he's on screen for like maybe 15 seconds eating those shrimp. He did not eat 40.
No, he did not
oh my God.
All those shrimp.
Who was blowing those takes so much that he had to eat so much shrimp?
Yeah.
It would have to have been Matt Damon because he was the only one really delivering lines.
Oh my God, they just kept making him eat shrimp. That's why Brad Pitt took a pay cut, because he worked it back in just shrimp.
Oh man.
No. The cast did gamble off hours. While there's disagreement between who won the most, George Clooney says Matt Damon, Damon says Brad Pitt, Clooney managed to lose 25 hands of blackjack in a row. That is statistically very hard. You have to at some point just be dealt a 21. It's blackjack.
Yeah.
That's actually a massive anomaly. I can't believe that happened.
Oof.
Matt Damon's part as Linus Caldwell, the pickpocket, was initially meant for Mark Wahlberg, who turned down the role in order to star in Planet of the Apes 2001. So a decision was made. More decisions were made as Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson were to play the brothers Virgil and Turk, but dropped out to film the Royal Tenenbaums. However, we're thinking that's a better decision.
Yeah, that probably was a better decision. Oh, that would have been cool, though, because they are actually brothers.
Yeah.
Unlike Casey Affleck and what's the other guy?
Scott. I don't want to scroll. There's too many. I can't scroll up.
Yeah, I watched.
Scott Kahn.
No.
Can?
Can? Maybe? Can?
He was in there. We can look this up.
I think it is Scott Kahn, because he was in Hawaii 5-0 for a long time, and I used to watch that show. He's cool. I like him.
It was Scott Kahn. Speaking of people who turned down roles, Danny Glover also turned down the role of Frank Catton in order to be in that film.
Was that...
That was a part of the Royal Tenenbaums fact. Sorry. So
I was super confused because it had been enough time between when you said the original fact to when you said that one that I was like, Danny Glover, what?
Yeah, I should have said Royal Tenenbaums, but I forgot what movie we were referencing to.
Yes, there we are.
And we're not done because Bruce Willis was originally cast as Danny Ocean, but had to pull out due to scheduling conflicts. He'd later make a cameo appearance in the 2004 sequel.
Yeah, I think George Clooney is the choice there.
I think there's no other way to go. He was so right.
As much as I love Bruce Willis, I think George Clooney just has the swagger for that type of role.
Yeah. Are we ready to don our Cheadles?
It's okay.
Because we got back-to-back Cheadling. Okay. Don Cheadle is uncredited despite having a major role. This is due to a dispute over his billing. Cheadle wanted above the title billing alongside George Clooney, Matt Damon, and Brad Pitt. When he was refused, he refused to be credited at all. Cheadle received above the title billing in Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13. He wanted to be known for this. I would use someone else's name if I were him.
At what point did this negotiation happen? Because was it like before they shot the movie? Because that could explain the weird choice. He's like, fuck this movie. I ain't getting top billing. Fuck you guys. Or if it was afterwards, then yeah, it's a little less.
It has to be. Because so you know when you've done a bad job. I have handed in some absolute bad assignments and work. And I know when I haven't tried that hard. It had to have been before. That's the world I choose to live
in. Yeah, okay.
And lastly, Don Cheadle admitted that his Cockney accent isn't great. He wanted to change it for the sequels, but his agent said no.
His agent said no?
His agent refused him to improve his accent that he admitted was not very good.
Oh my God. That's something.
That is really something. And Kyle, that brings us to the wrap up. What more do you have for Ocean's 11?
I think you should watch it. I feel like it's such a good choice to put on. I think you'll easily see the points that we made, or like the issues that we have with this movie. But it is a really fun movie to watch, and I don't think you should take our criticisms as a reason to not watch it.
That's true. I think if you're watching this, you should eat 40 shrimp and just put yourself through what Brad Pitt felt. Put yourself in the pit zone, in the pit stop, and see how you feel after eating 40 shrimp while on the job. Unbelievable. That man's just on a mission.
Yeah.
To film a scene where he kind of stands there. And that's all I have for Ocean's 11.
Great. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 3 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media, Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Ocean's 11 or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
How to be a spy. Good spy puts himself in the mindset of the opponent.
Ew, gross.
What do you see?
You.
Duty!
Now, they're on a mission.
I know this shit's gonna happen!
To stop an evil genius.
You promised us an army, Mr. Fluke.
They're very capable robots, and I can make them look like anyone.
President's daughter?
Rescue their parents. And save the world.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Spy Kids, so make sure to watch it before next episode. I believe it's on Amazon Prime. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.